In an era when people are reduced to partisan bickering and squabble over the smallest of matters and never achieve any agreement on anything, we are here to provide a new light in a dark world of journalism. We are the Bipartisan with Riley Lauterbach and Hannah Albor.
Welcome back to the Bipartisan Podcast, your independent source for news, fun, and reform. This is our first show back of the new year, and I'm proud to say that this week will be our one-year anniversary of the podcast. So thanks for sticking around if you've been around for long. And if you haven't, if this is your first show, welcome, and I hope you'll stick around for another year. We are once again working with the Student Post, formerly known as Bipolitics.com, and we are like officially their podcast. So you can find them at thestudentpost.org. You can find us on Stitcher and Anchor, as well as most other podcast platforms. And if you want, you can send us an email. You can send us a message or a voicemail via Anchor, and we'll see if we can put it into our next show. You can check out our website for updates, our schedule, and more at sites.google.com/u/BP Podcast 1. You can check us out on Twitter at BipartisanPodC1, and if you can, shoot us a few dollars on Patreon for a lot of cool perks. It's at patreon.com/BipartisanPodcast. And if you're interested in sponsoring us, be sure to call or email today. I am Hannah Albor, your left-leaning co-host.
I'm Riley Lauterbach, your right-leaning co-host.
And today we have a special guest host, Ben Speaks.
Hello. Glad to be here. Well, I am 16 years old. I'm a junior in high school. I live in Southern California, where Rod lives. And I really enjoy speech and debate, cinematography, and music. As far as concerning the Bipartisan Podcast, I really love the news ever since I started extemporaneous speaking. It's really fun to enjoy. And I am a conservative and almost all regards. Considering that for every one conservative media publication, there are five leftist publications, I found that podcasts like this are very important to be on. So I'm here to represent.
Awesome. So let's get into our top five stories. This week, we brought in a new Congress. This is the 116th Congress. They were sworn in January 3rd. And with this new House and a Democratic majority came a lot of cool changes in the rules of Congress. So the first one is known as pay-as-you-go. It requires all new spending to be offset by equal cuts or tax increases. There's a rule that would force House lawmakers to be financially liable for discrimination settlements as well as sexual harassment settlements. There is a rule that would make it easier to raise the government's statutory borrowing limit by making a boost to the debt ceiling automatic with the passage of an annual budget. Another rule is that you would be guaranteed 72 hours to read any bill before a vote. One creates a select committee on climate change. And finally, a rule changes traditional rules of decorum on the House floor to allow for religious headgear. So y'all, what do you think about this new Congress and the rules that they're bringing in?
Well, also something I think you didn't end up covering when you were talking about is how they are attempting to push to reopen the government. On top of that, this is starting to apply more and more pressure to the Republican Party, and hopefully we can start to see both sides come together and decide on something mutual rather than this constant fighting. Other than that, again, as a Republican, I don't 100% agree with everything that the Democrats are putting into play here. But I do think it is good that we're starting to see kind of some more pressure being put on the Republican side and on the Democrat side to kind of come back together and find some resolution to what's been happening right now.
Yeah, Ben, what do you think?
Well, I would say that overall, I agree with a lot of the things, which is surprising because I wouldn't side with Nancy Pelosi on a lot of what she thinks. But as far as the religious headwear goes, definitely a good thing. Bipartisan bills, depending on the bill, obviously, those are good or bad. What I would say is that PAYGO, which is offsetting spending from the House of Representatives, as you mentioned, Hannah, is probably also a good thing, as we don't want the House of Representatives just spending an unlimited amount of our taxpayer dollars. But the thing about the climate crisis, creating a committee on this is going to be a waste of our taxpayer dollars, as I don't feel that climate change is a big issue. My opinion on that.
Okay, so there's a lot of interesting stuff in here. As far as pay as you go, I don't think I'm a really big fan of this, to be honest, because while it's important that we have like funding for things, I think that there are some things we need to put above that and say, we need to get this done no matter if we have the money for it or not. But I think that Nancy Pelosi was definitely playing it safe with this one. I think she was trying to be as neutral as she could, as centrist as she could. But I think a lot of the stuff is really great, like the traditional headgear, allowing for religious headgear, a nod to Ilhan Omar, one of the first Somali women to be a representative in Congress. I think the 72 hours to read a bill before any vote is a really great idea, because as we've seen in the past, a lot of things happen very quickly and also very late at night for Congress, especially when we're getting down to crunch time for things like the budget. I think it's good that we have that time for Congress people to be able to read it and vote their conscience. And I have to disagree with you, Ben, about the climate change committee. I think that climate change is a really big deal, especially because as time goes on, we notice that like our fossil fuels and like general things like that are becoming a problem. And so I think that this committee will bring some benefit to the United States and help us get back on the platform of other nations who signed the Paris Committee or signed the Paris Climate Agreement and stuck with it, unlike us. So I think that this is a good thing.
So I do appreciate some of the more positive, like neutral things that have happened with this, like the religious headgear thing. I think that's something that's not going to hurt or help either party. It's just something that's good for our society. It's a very bipartisan thing that was resolved. I'm going to have to agree with Ben that I don't think climate change should be at the forefront of our issues right now. I think that's an eventual issue we should solve, but right now there are more important things striking our country. I'm actually a pretty big fan of pay as you go. I'm not the biggest fan. I think there are better methods that could be done, but I like it more than what we had in place before.
Awesome. Ben, do you want to give us, you want to do our last word?
Yeah, so let's talk about just three things. Mostly, I want to amend my answer about the headgear. First of all, a lot of times we've seen that religious includes most other religions and not Christianity. So if this is truly inclusive of all religions, then I'm for it. Just wanted to make that clear. On the house rules, or rather not the house rules. Sorry about that. What I meant was the Pedro. The Pedro is interesting because obviously we can't get things done if we don't have the money to get them done. So even if they're important, without the money, we can't get it done. Just talking about what you said about that, Hannah. On the climate change, fossil fuel waste is not a big deal, as if you do a little bit of research on wind turbines and other forms of clean energy, fossil fuels are actually not more beneficial to the environment than most clean energy. And the stats on wind turbines are pretty severe. They ruin almost all aspects of the environment, from trees and water being polluted, all sorts of other things. So besides, even if you would side with the climate crisis ideal, we already have the taxpayer spending EPA to deal with this. So I don't think we need another committee.
Okay, well, Riley, do you want to take us into our next story?
I do. So recently, Brazil had a brand new president elected. They held the ceremony on New Year's Day. Now, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation.
Do you want me to do it?
Hannah, can you do it better than I can?
Jair Bolsonaro.
There you go. So what happened with him is he is a right-leaning leader, and a lot of Brazilian people are hoping he is going to end the corruption that has been going on in the country for decades now. He lines up with the views of Donald Trump and is a huge supporter of President Donald Trump, which a lot of critics across the United States and Brazil are attacking him on. But a lot of supporters believe he is going to end a lot of the different issues that have been plaguing Brazil for all these years. I think that definitely it is a good time to change parties within Brazil, because we've seen that in the past Brazil has had problems. I don't know what the effects of this are going to be quite yet, but I do think that this could be a definite good thing for Brazil and a potential end to the corruption. What do you think, Hannah?
Yeah, so I'm really not a big fan of Bolsonaro. He said a lot of like scary things. Like, I'm gonna read you a few quotes that I found while I was researching him. One is, "I had four sons, but then I had a moment of weakness, and the fifth was a girl." He said, "I'm not going to rape you because you're ugly," to a female representative in Congress. And finally, "I'd rather have my son die in a car accident than have him showing up dating some guy." And I think that a lot of, like, these things are obviously very, I don't want to say, like, left-wing, because I know there are a lot, or right-wing, because I know there are a lot of, like, people who are to the right of the spectrum that aren't like this, but these are some not nice things to be saying, especially if you're the president of a country where you have women, like, you're leading women and people in the LGBT community, and to be saying these things is not reflective of what I think a leader should be.
Yeah, so on that note, obviously we can't justify Trump in all his moral areas. We can't justify Bolsonaro in all of his moral areas either. But overall, my stance is that this guy is going to be a great leader for Brazil. And yes, Riley, he is going to take the corruption out to a good degree. To look at some of the things that he's been saying, he promised to combat the ideology of gender teaching in schools. So that could be, that's kind of a vague term. But from what you said, Hannah, that could be anything from promoting men to way above women. It could be also simply eliminating transgender and homosexuality ideals, which, in my opinion, is a very good thing. He said that he wanted to respect our Judeo-Christian tradition. Being a Christian, I respect that. And also, he said that he was going to prepare children for the job market, not political militancy. This guy is into defending his country, but creating a good economy, not necessarily taking over other countries. He's a very good leader in this regard. His moral character may not be supreme, but he's going to be good.
Yeah, so something that comes into play with the Brazilian president, the same way I'm conflicted on Donald Trump, is while a majority of my views lean right when it comes to economy, when it comes to military, when it comes to national security, my social relations end up aligning more with Democratic. And this is where I'm really conflicted on this president, because I think he is going to fix corruption in Brazil. I think he's going to solve a lot of the economic turmoils they've suffered. But at the same time, I think he is going to reverse a lot of the social change that Brazil has experienced over the past couple years. It's just going to end up, what I think is going to end up happening is a lot of the social change Brazil has happened is going to revert, but at the same time, a lot of the corruption is going to end, so when the next president comes in, they can re-implement that social change with the lack of corruption that he is going to put into play.
Yeah, so I very much view my representatives and any representative of any country based on how well they could lead the country morally. Like, being Catholic, I think that's one of the really big things that I look for, is someone who is respectable and, like, morally upright. And this guy definitely isn't. And so while I can appreciate that he's trying to end corruption and do things at the political and economic level, I think first and foremost, you have to judge someone by their character before you think about what they could accomplish for your country. Because if you're doing these things, sure, that's all fine and good, but you also have people who are being, like, actually, like, repressed in your society. And I don't think we should put his maybe sort of, like, ability to combat corruption, which is, like, a really broad thing, and, like, he didn't lay out any plan to do that. So I think that's him saying that he's going to end corruption, as opposed to him saying he'd rather his son die than show up dating a man, or to say that he's not going to rape someone because they're ugly, or say that, like, it's a weakness to have a girl. I think that's, like, you can't put those two together.
On your character being the primary thing, if we were to view character as the primary thing when electing officials, nobody would get elected because nobody has a perfect character. It's the same with sports. When we watch a football star, we don't look to see if he is a perfect guy. We look to see if he plays football well. And if we like him, then he plays football well. Same with the political leader. I like Trump. I like Bolsonaro because their political views are good and they're going to do what's best for their country. While their morals may not be perfect, that's not their job. Their job is to be the president of a country. So in that way, character is not, in my opinion at least, the most important thing we need to be looking at. We need to be looking at their political views. And their political views are very solid. He's going to take out corruption, and he's into defending his country and keeping it green and yellow instead of red, communistic, as he said.
All right, I think we're going to continue to argue about character and policies within this next segment. So, Hannah, if you want to go ahead and introduce the next story.
Yeah, okay. So our next story is that Elizabeth Warren has announced that she wants to run for president in 2020. She announced over the break while we were gone, and this article is written January 3rd, that she has put feelers out to see how she could go about running for president. If you didn't know, Elizabeth Warren is the senator from Massachusetts. She has been in Congress and in the Senate for a very long time. She is an outspoken, left-leaning Democrat. She has gone up against Donald Trump many times, and also as well as Mitch McConnell. You have that legendary line, nevertheless, she persisted. That's Elizabeth Warren. And she has decided that she wants to run for president in 2020. And I'm going to let everyone else talk in a second, but as the left-leaning co-host, I am so excited. Like, I might not agree with Elizabeth Warren on absolutely everything, but I think that she's going to be a really great voice in the primary to push the Democrats to really stand for what the left wants them to. And I'm really excited. So let's get Riley's opinion on this.
So as someone that follows more right politics, I'm not a huge follower of what's going on the Democratic side, but I do know that if any Democrat has a big chance of winning, Warren is one of the ones up there that has a high potential of winning the presidential race in 2020. I know a lot of Democrats love her, and I know that she has been a major figure for years. I think her announcement was super expected. I don't think there was anything unexpected. I think even last podcast you mentioned you thought she was going to run. Like, I don't think this was a surprise by any means, and while I may not agree with her, I do think that this was predictable, and I do think she's going to make it very far within the 2020 race.
Yeah, Ben?
So, I would say that Warren is, as you mentioned, Riley, it's been around for a very long time. And some Democrats will actually not like her because of this. Here's why. When Nancy Pelosi was getting nominated, 16 Democrats wrote a letter against her saying that Democrats in the 2016 election ran on a message of change. Democrats these days are really wanting change. Elizabeth Warren, however, has been around for a very long time and isn't exactly offering that. Trump, however, is very much for change. He's been changing us, our country, for the better. So, as far as Elizabeth Warren going far, possibly, but she's not going to get the total support of her party in this regard.
Yeah, I don't think any candidate gets the total, like, acceptance of their party. Like, Donald Trump definitely isn't respected by all Republicans, and while I do think that Elizabeth Warren will go far and she will have a definite voice in the primary, I do think that a lot of Democrats see this as a good thing. She is, like she has been in politics for a very long time, and I do see how a lot of Democrats want to push for younger and more diverse candidates, and I'm all for that. But I do think that when you want someone to run who is so young, let's look at Barack Obama, okay? So Barack Obama was young. It was completely unexpected for him to run for president so early in his, like, political career. But he had Joe Biden behind him, and Joe Biden, was a very well-respected Democrat. And I think that if a young person wants to be elected, they should have someone who is more experienced and more well-known backing them. So I think Elizabeth Warren, if she doesn't make it to the presidency, would be a very, very good vice president for any young politician who wants to make it to the presidency if they're not super well-known by the Democratic base.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Hannah on here. Ben, I do see what you're saying, that a lot of Democrats want more change and that she's an older figure, but I think an older figure is more reliable, and even if they claim they want change, I think the last election showed, with Bernie and Hillary making it as far as they did, they trust someone with more experience than they do somebody coming fresh into the fray. I think a lot of the people that are coming fresh are getting their feet wet by running, but I don't think anyone young is going to win this time around.
Yeah, on that, both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton had been around for a long time as well, and if you notice, neither of them got elected. Even as you mentioned, they did make it very far. Same with Elizabeth Warren. While she hasn't run for president, she's been in the Democratic Party for a very long time. As Trump mentioned, I'd love to run against her, and I'd have to ask her psychiatrist if she could win. This is really not a good sign for the Democratic Party because Trump is extremely confident against Elizabeth Warren, and he wasn't showing this much confidence when he was against Hillary. That means that it could mean an even bigger election and win for Trump if he runs again.
Yeah, so I have to say something on Donald Trump saying that we should ask her psychiatrist if she could win. I think that is extremely disrespectful to any person who, like, seeks help for their mental health. I think that, like, besides just being about Elizabeth Warren and how much he doesn't like Elizabeth Warren, how much he thinks that she's, like, not really Native American and that she's not really whatever this and whatever that, that statement is just completely disrespectful to any person in the United States, Republican or Democrat or centrist, who has dealt with mental health issues and who does seek help for that. And I think that just by slipping that into his vernacular shows how much he doesn't know about, like, regular Americans and what they need. I was just, it completely blew me out of the water. And, like, as someone who is, like, a mental health advocate and who has dealt with things like anxiety and stress and, like, who does, like, seek help for it when I can, I think that's just completely something that you should not say to a, like, I was just completely disgusted.
Yeah. I think with this upcoming election, we're going to see a lot more trash talking. I think that it's going to get worse and worse as division continues. But we should move on to our next story, because we could spend all day talking about this. But our next story further bleeds into the theory of this potential World War III we've been talking about since I've come on, with Iran planning naval drills with Russia across the Caspian Sea. What's been happening right now is Iran and Russia are joining military naval exercises, and this is actually definitely getting the United States worried. This is definitely a power play by Russia to kind of rub it in the United States that, like, this ally that they let go, Russia is now allying with after the nuclear deals were cut. So, Hannah, what do you think of this?
Yeah, I love how just every show we get further and further into, like, our World War III conspiracies. Like, this is, like, I read this and they're, like, just, it's scary, like, how much further and, like, how often we talk about it of, like, ooh, this is that side of the world kind of, like, showing off their power against the United States. And I think that as this does get further along, we'll talk about it later again in the show, that we are definitely moving further towards that idea of another war. Ben, what do you think?
I think if World War III will happen, it's not going to be a nuclear war, first of all, because once one side starts nuking, then the whole world will be destroyed, and nobody really wants that to happen. But the important thing to recognize about Russia is that it's making a lot of moves that were very similar to the Cold War, which, although it expected was a nuclear war, did not result in a war at all. Here we are, 50 years, almost 60 years later, with no World War III, and Russia is kind of repeating itself. It's been going to Cuba, trying to make friends with it. It's trying to build a bomber base in Venezuela. Really, it's just showing off its power. Russia loves to do this. As my good friend Nathan York would say, he's Putin on a show. He doesn't really want to start a war here. He just wants to show off his power. He was doing this. Russia was doing this exact same thing during the Cold War, and it did not result in a World War III in the least. Although, I dare say, people at the time were very concerned that it would result in a World War III.
Press. Okay. Yeah, I could kind of see what you're saying, but I even if it's not a third world war, I think a war is on the rise. As we've seen, Russia and China are working together, gathering allies and making military moves as a display of power against the United States, but I think we're coming closer and closer to this being a reality. If it doesn't turn into a war, it could, again, turn into a cold war, like you're saying, but I do think conflict is going to happen at some point with how many moves both the United States as well as these different powers that Russia's allying with are making.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Riley. I think that the further and further we get from having a peaceful solution to this. Like, the more showing off we do, the more boasting that we and Russia and North Korea do, the less likely it becomes that we can bring a peaceful solution to this.
Something on what Riley said that this could turn into a Cold War and that would lead to conflict. The Cold War did not really have any direct conflict between Russia and the U.S. It was really just military moves. This did not result in a world war, either nuclear or anything. In the end, Russia's just repeating itself. And for that reason, there's not really, I doubt there will be a conflict, as we'll talk about later in the show, with China making moves in Taiwan. We'll probably say that China likes to do the same thing as Russia.
Yeah, we will end up seeing how this goes. History could repeat itself and have nothing end up happening, or a slight difference could happen and we could see an all-out war. Hannah, you want to lead us into our next story?
Yeah, definitely. So, recently, there has been a global tech show to celebrate innovation amid mounting concerns about international trade. So, even though we have these trade wars and these tensions brewing in our world, we have seen through the show a lot of really awesome technology that's coming through. Visitors to the show can see dazzling TV screens, intuitive robots, a range of voice-activated devices, a folding or roll-up smartphone displays. I think a lot of this is super cool, and I'm excited to see that even though we are having this tension, that we can come together to celebrate technological advancements.
Well, something the story does continue to talk about is how there is still a lot of distrust with media companies and different technology companies, with the leaking of information from Facebook, and plenty of different issues that have happened over the past couple years with different social media companies and technology companies revealing users' identities. I think there's a lot of distrust going on, but I do think at the same time it is good that the public is getting able to see all the technological advances happening. I mean, the other day we talked about the all AI-operated newscaster in China. Artificial intelligence is taking a huge leap, and it's going to continue taking a huge leap. I think we're going to see a lot of growth and development that has taken place over the past year at this tech show.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with Riley and, in fact, Hannah on that, that there's a lot of cool technology coming out. This is very exciting, but at the same time, we need to be careful. We can't just let this technology violate too many of our privacy rights. We already have Facebook and other companies, like even Instagram, we can go into that later if you want, as Riley mentioned, that are borderline on violating our privacy and also borderline on regulation, according to some people. So yes, technology is exciting. I love new technology. It's super cool. But at the same time, we can't just take it for granted and invite it into our lives without first seeing if it's actually going to be a concern for us.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I think that it is important that we keep a control on who can see what when it comes to our technology and how we allow these kinds of things into our homes. But I am excited to see how that technology grows and how we can regulate it when it does become an issue or before it becomes an issue. But I am glad to see that people can come together over creating new technology that would better our human life.
Yeah, I think that what's going to happen is that it's really up to the consumer's draw at this point, right? Like, at this point, they know the risks of getting this technology and allowing it into their home, as they've seen many companies betray the trust they've put into place. At this point, it's the consumer's risk. Do they want something that is easy of life at the risk of their personal information, or are they going to stick to what they know and not implement this into their homes? I think this is going to show off what these machines can do, but I think everybody of the American public is definitely going to be on suspicion that their personal information could be leaked, that there is going to be some sort of issue that has been caused in the past. I think everyone's going to be a little bit weary and definitely less trustworthy than normal.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's up to the consumers at this point. We know what could go on and the dangers associated with new technology.
Yeah, awesome. So this has been a really great edition of our top five stories, and we'll see you in a second with our breaking news segment.
And now, bringing you the hardest hitting journalism out there, it's time for
breaking news.
All right, welcome back to our totally real, totally serious, totally important breaking news stories. Our first story is about a Florida gas station owner who had to put up a sign on his microwave that said for people not to warm up their cups of urine. His gas station is located right in between two different drug testing areas, so people constantly would come in and bring their cups of urine and microwave them. And after a lady told him, "I need to see a sign for you to be able to tell me this," he ended up making one and putting it on his microwave. And I'd just like to say, of course this happened in Florida.
This is super gross. Like, I read it and I wanted to vomit. like, just imagining, like, people's pee being, like, in the same place that, like, you warm up, like, a hot dog or something just makes me want to gag.
Yeah, the worst part of the whole thing was that the lady actually got mad at the gas station owner when he wouldn't let her microwave that stuff in there. That's the worst of it. Why does she think she has the right to do that?
Yeah, our next story involves a man and a spider. So police stormed a house in Australia after a man was overheard screaming, "Why don't you die?" And so neighbors, not knowing he was yelling at a spider, called the police and said that they heard children screaming. And so police showed up, obviously, like as you do when someone says, "Why don't you just die?" And then you hear a child scream. But they found out he was yelling at a spider.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious. The fact that, like, because according to the story, the child screaming and the man yelling were completely unassociated, right? Like, the spider wasn't causing the kid to get upset. They were unassociated. But the fact that both were going on at the same time caused the neighbor to believe that something really bad was happening, call the police, and this whole fiasco happened over a spider. I hope in the end, though, he got his justice and took that spider out.
Yeah, the article did state that the spider was the one to suffer injuries. But probably well worth it because there are many poisonous spiders that live in Australia, and so we can see why this man had an extreme case of arachnophobia. On a second note, they have a really good neighbor.
Yeah, like, honestly, same. This guy yelling at a spider, I felt that on, like, a spiritual level. I think that we have a lot in common, me and this man.
Our next story is that a Florida man was arrested for stealing $500,000 worth of tequila on New Year's Eve. Him and his friends decided to break into the back of a truck and steal a bunch of tequila. I mean, I hope they had a good New Year's Eve at that point, I guess. But, I mean, the fact that they were caught, like, they'd do something so stupid that they would get caught that easily for it. Like, it'd be pretty easy if they just took one thing of tequila out of the back. They probably would have never even gotten caught. But they took $500,000 worth. Of course someone was going to investigate, and of course they were going to get caught.
Yeah, it was 966 cases of tequila. I don't understand how they were going to carry that anywhere, like if they were, like, stuck it in the back of their car and just, like, carry it. But this was not well thought out. If you're going to break the law, do it smart and, like, don't get caught with $507,105 worth of tequila.
So he couldn't fit it all in his car, so these four guys had to actually steal a truck to commit their stupid crime. In addition to that, I don't know what they were planning to do with it, whether to drink it all or sell it all or what, but
I'm sure it was a combination of both. I'm sure they had a fun New Year's and then planned to sell the rest. But, I mean, I'd just like to say before we move on to our next segment, of course this was Florida as well.
Wait, but, like, why didn't they just steal the truck? Like, why were they taking individual cases? That's what I'm so worried about.
No, the thing is, they broke into a truck, stole it, and transferred it to a truck they stole. Like, why not just take the initial truck? I don't get it either. All right, let's move on to our next segment.
Time to see if our hosts have been paying attention to the news. It's time for our current events quiz. I'll ask a question, the host will have 20 seconds to come up with an answer, and then we'll see who's right. Everybody ready? Let's go. Hello everybody, it is Rod, your wonderful producer of this fine podcast here again for your current events quiz. Now, as the intro said, everyone gets 20 seconds to come up with an answer. We'll cut this 20 seconds out and the end production so that you won't have to listen to 20 seconds of nothing. So, going right off into our first question, which nation, for the first time other than America, is on a mission to make a manned mission to the moon? Again, which nation, for the first time other than America, is on a mission to make a manned mission to the moon? You have 20 seconds. And your 20 seconds is up. Riley, we'll hear your answer first. Go ahead.
Since I know I'm not going to get this, it's Florida.
All right. And Hannah?
It's China.
All right. And Ben, what is your answer?
It is China.
All right. The answer is China. That's right. Hannah and Ben got it correct. Sorry, Riley. Last year, for the first time, China passed the United States in orbital launches, most in number of orbital launches, most of them for satellites. With the moon landing, China is now positioned as a contender for exploration, communications, and space commerce. The primary material on the moon that they're looking for is helium-3, which for now is too expensive to haul back to Earth, but in theory, the non-radioactive isotope could be used as fuel for the next generations of spacecraft to explore deeper into space. Very interesting stuff. So, our second question is, what condition has the U.S. put on a withdrawal from Syria? Again, which condition has the U.S. put on a withdrawal from Syria? You have 20 seconds. All right, and your 20 seconds is up. So, Hannah, we'll hear your answer first.
I have no idea, but I'm going to guess that it has something to do with, like, civilian populations and making sure that they're okay before we pull out.
All right, and Ben, what's your answer?
I would say I'm not completely sure, but that the Syrian government would stop abusing by torturing and murdering its civilians.
All right, and Riley, what is your answer?
So I'm probably going to go with they're putting some sort of tariff on something. That's my best guess.
All right, so actually, it's Hannah technically got the closest answer, so I'll give the point to her. It's really random and obscure, so to be fair, you guys probably wouldn't have gotten it anyhow. So the answer is protection for the Kurds and a potential Kurdistan state. Turkey will not be permitted to kill Kurdish fighters in northern Syria, and a U.S. withdrawal from the country won't happen without a deal to protect them, White House National Security Advisor John Bolton told reporters on Sunday. Which, as it happens, is the day that we are recording this podcast. Alright, who's ready for our third and final question? So far, the score is Riley 1, Hannah 2, Ben 1. So there's a chance for a tie here. You're at 0? Oh my gosh, you are at 0. I'm sorry. That's true. So, Riley, I hate to say it, but you are out of competition at this point, but I still would like to hear your answer, just for fun. Sounds good. All right, so who's ready for our third and final question?
Yep.
All right, the third and final question is, which formerly popular tourist destination and historical city is sinking in popularity? You have 20 seconds. All right, your 20 seconds has elapsed. Ben, you go first this time. What is your answer to the question?
Okay, I don't know, but I'm going to say Chichen Itza, because it is a very historical city, and it is also a popular tourist attraction.
All right, and Hannah, what is your answer?
I'm going to say Rome.
Okay, and Riley, what is your final answer?
I'm going to say Atlantis, because it is a literally sinking city.
Oof. Actually, wow. This is crazy. Riley, I'm going to give him the point, because he got it the closest.
Wait, closest geographically? Or
the closest topically? The closest answer topically. The answer to the question, which formerly popular tourist destination and historical city is sinking in popularity, is Venice. Venezia, as the Italians would say. A minimum city entry fee of €2 and 50. Okay, do they call them cents in Europe? I'm sorry, I sound terrible about this. Do they call them cents in Europe?
I'm going to use cents
because I don't think we have any European listeners. So
€2.50.
A minimum city entry fee of €2.50 throughout the year has been implemented in Venice, rising to between €5 and €10 during peak periods. It has been implemented in Venice in an effort to raise funds to combat increasing flood problems. This tax, however, has decreased tourism in the city, and the city continues to face a crisis sinking, quite literally. It's pretty sad, honestly. The city has continued to sink for a long time now, and the fact is a large, old, ancient city such as this, built literally on wooden pilings, is not going to hold up forever. So, there you guys have it, your current events quiz. I, once again, am the producer, Rod. I'll be back to moderate the discussion for today, which is going to be very interesting indeed. For now, Riley and Hannah, I'm thinking about coffee.
Are you really? Because I kind of
am, too. I know, it's crazy.
Well, attention all coffee lovers. If you love coffee, hate crony capitalism, and love small businesses, then Anarcho Coffee is for you.
That's right, Hannah. Anarcho Coffee sells sustainably and ethically grown craft coffee at affordable prices, as well as some swag for lovers of the brand.
Anarcho Coffee is the premier coffee for those who support true capitalism, hate cronyism, and you can get 10% off your first order with code ANCAP2018. That's ANCAP2018.
You can find them at anarchocoffee.com, ANARCHOCOFFEE.com. They accept all major cryptocurrencies in addition to dollars. Anarcho Coffee, self-governed caffeine.
Well, as much as I would love to dawdle on my victory, let's check in with three other stories that happened this week. So our first has to do with China, once again. China has been threatening Taiwan, the United States, Australia, and the Philippines, having to do with the South China Sea. A Chinese admiral said that he wanted to sink two United States aircraft carriers in order to dominate the South China Sea. Riley, what do you think about this?
So I think this is a further power play by China to kind of get out there and show the United States they're not messing around anymore. I do think this is furthering the tension that we have seen with the things such as the trade war, as well as a lot of the different military moves and allyship between China and Russia that has been recently developing in the past year or two. I think that this is just going to further the tension, and I don't think this is a tension-breaking move, but I think it's going to continue to increase it for when the tension does eventually break.
Yeah, Ben?
First of all, I think it's silly for China to be thinking that our aircraft carriers are our Achilles heels. I do not agree with that. But secondly, even if there was a war, I don't believe that China would be able to win. For one, let's talk about Taiwan. Taiwan is a U.S. ally. Even if China could invade Taiwan, they would have 2 weeks to gain a victory. And stats show that Taiwan would be able to hold them off for 2 weeks. They would not take Taiwan. Secondly, if China were to attack the U.S., the U.S., who's in a trade war right now and supports China's economy with a great deal of trade, could cut trade, impose sanctions, and plummet the Chinese economy. This would further weaken China and not allow them to win a war against the U.S. So, in the end, I don't think there's going to be a war, but if there is, China would certainly not win. The U.S. and Taiwan would almost certainly come out on top.
All right, our next story is how Netflix pulled the episode of Hasan Minhaj's show that criticized the Saudi government as request of the Saudi Arabian government. What Minhaj said is that it is needed to be able to say these things, and I'm very conflicted on this issue. I believe that people should have artistic expression and be allowed to say what they think and what they want, but at the end of the day, Netflix as a company, as an independent company, has the right to take down whatever they want. And since this was requested by the Saudi Arabian government, a lot of people are especially mad at Netflix because this wasn't necessarily a 100% Netflix ran move. It was at the request of the Saudi Arabian government. So Hannah, what do you think of this?
Yeah, so what Hasan Minhaj said really wasn't that damaging to Saudi Arabia. He said, quote, "Now would be a good time to reassess our relationship with Saudi Arabia, and I mean that as a Muslim and as an American." He then went on to criticize Saudi Arabia's role in the ongoing Yemeni civil war, as well as criticizing Silicon Valley for, quote, "swimming in Saudi cash." So I don't think this was anything, like, especially damaging towards Saudi Arabia, but I think that this is a move by Saudi Arabia against, just in general, people sharing their views on the internet about Saudi Arabia.
Ben?
Yeah, so regardless of whether this move was good or bad, Netflix is making a statement here. And they're making a statement because this video is still available on YouTube and other users can obtain it with a VPN. So the point that Netflix is making is that they don't support this content, not necessarily that people shouldn't be watching it. And if you may notice, this move definitely supports Trump because Netflix is following what the Saudi Arabian government said, therefore supporting Saudi Arabia and their ideals. Trump as well supports Saudi Arabia, as we've seen in the recent Jamal Khashoggi incident.
Yeah, so that's an interesting take. Let's move on to our next and final story for this section. A California bill has barred prosecution for children under 12. This move talks about how it is not necessarily beneficial for young children to be in jail and how we should move more towards helping that child overcome whatever problems led them to commit these crimes. And I think that's a really great idea. I think that as a whole, we should start moving our justice system away from punishing others and moving again towards rehabilitating people who have committed crimes and reintegrating them into society as better people.
Yeah, I think that the biggest issue with this is that this just encourages further use of children, right? Because the thing is, these kids are impressionable. People can convince them to do things very easily. And we see that a lot of kids are involved in different drug scandals. And I think that while this bill serves to ensure that these kids aren't punished and restricted for the rest of their lives because of a mistake when they made when they were kids, unable to really comprehend the whole world, I think it's just going to further encourage more people to use kids to get away with things that they don't want to be arrested for. Because if they can use kids to do it that won't be locked up, what's the real punishment, right? So I think it's definitely something that it's a double-edged sword, right? These kids aren't losing opportunities. These kids aren't being punished for the rest of their life for something they're not fully able to comprehend. But at the same time, it's only going to encourage further crime and further use of children.
I think the big deal is that the child needs to know that his or her action was wrong. If it takes jail to do that, if it takes rehabilitation to do that, either can be used. But I think I need to make a comment on Hannah's take on the justice system. Our justice system is not to improve the lives of people per se, it's to punish wrong. So, if children at this young age understand that they did wrong by committing crimes, then the justice system is doing nothing wrong, and California should not have put this law in place.
Okay, so this has been our three other stories, and we'll see you next with the bipartisanship update.
And this time I'm...
It's time for the bipartisanship update, presented by the Bipartisan Podcast.
Welcome back to our bipartisanship update, where we're going to inform you about a bill that is being pushed to promote further cybersecurity education. This bill is currently in the works, and what it serves to do is provide more funding towards cybersecurity education for younger generations so they can better understand the risks of being a part of the cyberspace and what they can do to further prevent that. I think as we are starting to move towards further technological advancements, and as technology is becoming more and more part of everyday life, as well as the different jobs people are going to hold when they're older, it is very important that people understand how to stay safe on the internet, how to ensure what they're doing is safe, and how to make sure that public information or their private information isn't leaked out to the public. I think it's definitely good because a lot of kids and even adults nowadays don't understand the full risks of what they're doing when they're online. As we talked about before, where social media companies have leaked people's information, it's good to understand how to keep yourself safe online and what the risks of hopping on different social media sites and using different types of technology are. What do you think, Hannah? Or what do you think, Ben?
I would say I pretty much agree with you. This is a good thing. But at the same time, I'm wondering, why are we providing cybersecurity education, but while there seems to be a lack of education about physical security, you could put it, as far as our military is concerned and other such things, protecting the border. We're talking about cybersecurity to protect our nation, but how come we're not talking about the physical security, which could be argued is even more important, protecting our borders and other such things? I think that's being left out, and it needs to be put in as well.
Well, I think that a lot of, like, military stuff is kind of covered and, like, history and like government in high school, but I do think that this is a pretty interesting step that the United States is taking. I think that we should do like whatever we do that benefits students and like them deciding careers they want to go into, or like we said, like how to stay safe on the internet. I think that's a really great idea. I think that we should be pushing a lot of students to get into these different careers as technology blooms and we get further into the future. I think that this is a really great step to kind of show that, like, the United States cares about its children and how its children grow up and enter the workforce. Okay, so let's head into our commercial break and we'll see you on the other side.
And another huge thank you to our sponsors. Remember to go ahead and check them out to ensure that we can keep going and that they continue to ensure us to keep up the high quality of show you guys enjoy. And with that, I'll let our producer, Rod, lead us into the discussion.
All right, guys. Hi, Rodney, again, back to moderate today's discussion. Very interesting topic for today. More morbid than normal, but, you know, it's going to be a good political discussion, and I can't wait to hear what all of your views are on the death penalty. So first, I would like to hear each of your overall opinions on this subject. Riley, we will start with you.
So I think the biggest problem with the death penalty is the fact of our flawed justice system that keeps these people in prison for long periods of time taking taxpayer money. But from a moral level, I think the death penalty is entirely acceptable. I think you should be punished with a crime, or you should have a punishment equal to the crime of that you committed. And so if you rape, if you murder, I think that you should end up dying. Like, there's no reason for you to be on this earth anymore. From a moral level, I have no concern with it. The biggest problem is the amount of taxpayer money being taken out of us to keep these people in prison.
All right, and Hannah, what is your overall quick take on this?
Ooh, I don't like the death penalty. Like, being raised Catholic, it was kind of that, like, you turn the other cheek, and I very much stand by that. I think that killing people's bad.
All right, and Ben, your overall impression on this subject, what's your quick take?
The death penalty is a good institution, and as Hannah said, killing people is bad, and that is exactly why we have the death penalty, as we can explain later.
All right, and so, Riley, we're going to you again. What is, go a little more in-depth on your opinion on this, and do you have any stuff you could back it up with to help our audience better understand this issue?
Yeah, so what a lot of people don't tend to know is that these people often are sentenced to death, and they wait in prison for 10, 15 years, and that is taking taxpayer money to keep them in prison, because taxpayers fund the prisons. And so the biggest issue with the death penalty is not from a moral level, from my perspective. I think they should be punished with an equal crime. It's the fact that our justice system is so flawed that it leads it to just become problematic for the people's taxpayer money, keeping them in prison that long. I think that the issue of the death penalty is not necessarily a moral issue on my standpoint. It's the biggest problem is the fact that our criminal justice system is so flawed that we don't have a proper way to do this where it saves money and ensures that people aren't waiting for 10, 20 years taking money out of taxpayers in order to keep them in prison.
All right, and Ben, we'll go to you next. What is your go more in depth on your opinion on this? And do you have anything that you can back your opinion up with to, again, help our audience? Go ahead.
Here's the deal with the death penalty. People who limit others' rights to life deserve to have their own right to life limited, namely by use of the death penalty. This does save taxpayer money, as Riley pointed out, but the main point is security. Less people die if we kill somebody who could possibly be released on payroll and then go commit more horrible crimes and kill more people. We don't want more people to die, and the best way to prevent this is to get rid of people who kill others. That's my overall opinion, and again, we'll go more in depth.
All right, so Hannah, go a little more in depth on your opinion on this subject, and do you have anything else, some other outside information, some more information for our listeners on your opinion? Go ahead.
Yeah, so, like, morally, I just can't get past the fact that you're, like, taking somebody's life, and sure, that person has done wrong, and sure, like, they could get life in jail or some other punishment. I just don't think, like, morally, like, myself, I don't see killing someone else as punishment for killing as, like, a thing that we should be doing. And if you talk about, like, security and stuff, I think that we should, like, trust our security guards to, like, not let people out of prison if they have the, like, life in jail. And I think that having life in jail without parole is just as justifiable as killing someone. Like, I just can't imagine taking somebody's life. And I'll be all.
Right. And Riley, can you tell us morally, what is your opinion on it morally, specifically?
So I can see where people have problems. I'm not a super religious guy, so I don't really have any religious basis here. I think that if you took someone's life, if you raped someone, if you did a crime, irrehensible, you deserve to die, right? Like, I think if we instate, like, exact eye to eye, that'd be a little bit weird. I don't think there's a real way to implement somebody that raped someone getting raped in prison. I think that the best solution for someone like that is death penalty, as well as murderers. I think I have no moral quarrels with the death penalty. I think it's entirely justifiable to kill somebody that has done a crime that is so bad that it ruins someone else's life.
All right, and Ben, morally, right, wrong, what's your opinion?
The death penalty is morally right. We know that it is hard to get past the fact that we have to kill another human being. But here's the deal. That human being killed another human being. That is horrible, and that's why that person deserves to die. Here's the deal. The Constitution guarantees every person a right to life. Every person has a right to life. And when that is violated by another human being taking that right to life away, they deserve to have the same thing done back to them, which is them dying.
All right, and Hannah, morally, I know you've already expanded on this quite a bit, but just provide a little more if you want to respond to either of their comments. Go ahead.
I mean, yeah, so obviously the only thing I care about is morality, right? So, like, here's the deal, right? Is that you're taking an eye for an eye, basically. Like, I know Riley said he, like, didn't like that, but, like, you're killing someone who killed someone, or, like, you're killing someone who raped someone, and, like, sure, these crimes are violent. I'm not trying to, like, excuse crimes, but, like, there are other ways to go about it, and I think that just the idea of, like, taking somebody's right to life isn't beneficial to our society.
All right, and Riley, economically, what is your opinion on this economically? Is it economically right, economically wrong? You already given a little detail on this. Get into the economics of the death penalty.
I think the biggest issue is the fact that this process isn't streamlined enough. The fact that these people that get the death penalty are in prison for 15 to 20 years just wasting away at taxpayer money. Like, it's almost like a negligible effect to me, right? Like, it's the same thing as putting them in as life sentence. I think that first, before we can really discuss a death penalty, I think we need to reform our justice system to where this death penalty happens faster so it isn't wasting our taxpayer money. Because these people limited someone else's rights, so they should not have to end up taking taxpayer money. I think the biggest issue with the death penalty right now, for me at least, is not a moral standpoint. It's the fact that it is not streamlined enough, that it is taking taxpayer money out of taxpayers to keep these people in jail till their sentence comes up.
All right. Ben, we're going to you now. Economics, okay. What do you think?
So far we have, like, a security benefit on either side. We have somebody stays in jail and they don't die for the rest of their lives, or we have somebody dies due to the death penalty. So how are we going to say which is better? Because right now, they're not in society. Here's how. It's what Riley said. Economically beneficial. If we're paying for this person to stay alive, why would we pay for the murderer to have the right to life, which they violated of somebody else, and to get to read, to have other benefits, to have a facility where they can stay? I know it's jail, but it's better than death. When the person who got killed gets absolutely zero benefit out of this whole thing. We're literally funding the murderer and ignoring the person who had their rights utterly and violated in the worst way. So in the end, while it may be a tie, I don't believe it is, on dying or not, as far as morally is concerned, we should not be paying for murderers to stay alive.
And Hannah, we'll go to you now, your final remarks.
Yeah, so, like, economically, you can say, like, economically, like, keeping somebody alive is more expensive, but you also think you'll have to think about, like, the cost for the drugs that you inject someone with, and as that technology grows, and, like, as, like, different drugs are released and used, that adds up as well. And I think that with all of the different ways that, like, society has progressed, killing, like, with the death penalty, like, you start at, like, the guillotine and, like, the electric chair, and, like, now we have these drugs, and, like, as the technology grows, I think it's only going to get, like, more and more expensive to have the death penalty.
All right, everyone, that was a great discussion on the death penalty. Lots of different viewpoints represented, and some real good discussion that we got out of it. So, next, our hosts will take us into our feature story. For now, I am out of here. See you guys next episode. Bye.
And finally, we have our feature story. From CNN, on January 4th, 2019, GOP Senator Ted Cruz, Representative Rooney, introduced a congressional amendment to impose term limits on Congress. So this would restrict senators to 2 6-year terms, making that 12 years, and House members to 3 2-year terms, making that 6 years. Riley, what do you think about this idea of having term limits?
Well, for starters, I know your favorite person, Beto, comes up in here. I do think this is a very bipartisan issue here. I don't think either side's going to have a real quarrel with this. I think it's extremely good that, like, the biggest problem is this is to limit things such as corruption. This is supposed to limit things that have been plaguing our country. This is supposed to just provide a better system overall that allows no one to hold power for too long period of time, as well as no one to hold power for too short a period of time. I think this is going to equally benefit and equally hurt both parties, because there are people in both parties that abuse this system and people in both parties that respect the system and respect the people. I think that this is just going to have, like, no impact on either party. I think this is just going to be a better step to take for our country overall.
Yeah, Ben, what do you think?
So what I have to say about this is that this is great. This is a good thing. On the bipartisan issue, it definitely appears to be bipartisan, but what's interesting to note is that it was introduced by Republicans, and at the same time, there have been many long-standing Democrats that this bill would definitely affect. Well, there are not as many long-standing Republicans. So it is bipartisan. It is. But at the same time, it's interesting just to say to look at the amount of powerful Democrats that would be removed. It's interesting also to note that we have this sort of thing for our president. You can't be president for more than 8 years, or 10 years in the special case that you become president during a death of somebody when you were the vice president. So we have this condition on our president, but we don't have it for the House of Representatives or for the Senate. And so I think it's a very good thing to introduce. Unfortunately, if I'm a representative, I probably wouldn't want my terms being limited, so I would probably vote against it. Or I would actually personally vote for it, but most people are going to vote against it, so it's unlikely to pass. Nobody wants to limit their own power.
Yeah, so I definitely, like, don't hate this idea. I think it's important that we have these kind of checks on our representatives. There are a lot of both Democrats and Republicans who have been in Congress for a long time. The only thing I have to say is that I think that the term for House members could be a little bit longer, given that they don't have the same kind of power as a senator. I think it could give them 4 or 5 2-year terms, so that kind of equals the length of time as a senator. But other than that, I think that this is a good step towards having a bipartisan way to have more ideas in Congress. I think that with the idea of you can run as many times as you want, if you are well known in that district, then you will continue to win. I think this is a good way to have younger people coming into Congress as they face older incumbents who have been there longer. I think that this gives them a bit of a stepping stone into Congress or into the Senate.
Yeah, I think this further promotes the will of the people, what they're feeling at the time, and how much that this is going to affect and a positive impact if this passes. I do see what Ben's saying. It is probably unlikely to pass because a lot of different representatives aren't going to want to vote for this. But if it does, I do think that this is a genuinely good idea that's going to end up affecting both parties in no major good or bad way, but rather positively affect the people, which is what matters the most, is what the people are feeling. And I think this better promotes the people. As Hannah said, younger people can come in, and as time progresses, people that have held ideals that reflect an older audience of people, younger people can come in and reflect the newer audience of people. I think this is definitely going to help the country as a whole and better reflect the will of the people.
Yeah, so on Hannah's comment about the House of Representatives, I'm not sure whether I'm for or against that idea of leaving the bill as it is or letting the House of Representatives be longer, but I think we have two houses for a reason. There was an amendment to the Constitution which made it that the senators were not elected by state government officials anymore, but by the people. These houses have only grown closer and closer together over time, and the founders intended them to be separate. So I would separate the terms just so that they could continue to be separate houses as much as possible. That's just my take on that.
All right. And so with that, we're going to lead on out for today. You guys can find us on Anchor, Stitcher, as well as most other platforms, including Spotify, iTunes, and so on. You can check the website for updates, schedules, and more at sites.google.com/view/bppodcast.com. That's sites.google.com/view/bppodcast.com. You can contact us on Twitter at BipartisanPodC1. That's at BipartisanPodC1. You can email us at thebipartisanpodcast@gmail.com. You can call or text this number for questions at 619-201-0964, as well as different sponsorship deals. You can support us on Patreon for different cool perks at patreon.com/thebipartisanpodcast.com. If you're interested in sponsoring us, please call us or email us today. We are now the official podcast of the Student Post. I've been Riley Lauterbach.
I've been Hannah Albor.
And I'm Ben Speech. Thanks for having me on the show as your special guest host.
Of course, it was fun. Remember to come back next week for your independent source of news, fun, and reform. Bye.